Hello and welcome to the Dice Cabinet, a safe space for your spiciest tabletop takes. I'm your Secretary of Spice, Max Weinberg. My pronouns are he, him, and I could not be more excited to introduce our guests today. Hailing from across the border, he's the GM from the multi-award-winning Starfinder actual play podcast, No Quest for the Wicked. It's the Secretary of Space, Dane Miller.
Hello. That's great. I like Secretary of Space. That's a good title. I think I'm going to take that.
Go for it. It's all yours.
I'm hyped to be here. Like I said when we were talking just before air, I like rolling dice and I like talking about rolling dice. So I'm ready. I'm ready to go.
Next up, superstar on and off the mic. She's a producer for Overly Sarcastic Podcast and Movie Struck and a player producer for Rolling with Difficulty. It's the Secretary of Production, Sophia Ricciardi.
Thank you very much.
I keep wanting to like clap.
It was very hard for me not to applaud there.
Go for it.
I'm loving the secretary theme. We're assembling like the world's most perfect cabinet right now, which is appropriate.
Yeah.
That makes sense. We're in the dice cap. Oh man, we're putting the pieces together. Yeah, the puzzle is solved.
We're going to take meeting minutes like you would not believe.
And our final guest can be found playing TTRPGs anywhere and everywhere on the internet and is a published author. One of the brains behind Unprepared Casters and Critical Lit, the Secretary of Storytelling, it's Amelia Somm. I want to do that every single time I say one of your names. How's everyone doing today? It's kind of hot.
Yeah. Yeah, I record in a walk-in closet, so I'm in like essentially a small little oven, so I'm going to get real sweaty in here with y'all.
Yeah. We just had a huge storm blow through yesterday, which has brought it down to the high 70s from being 80 and 90 for the past week.
Nice.
So I'm actually like, this is as cool as it's been in weeks. I'm having a great time.
I'm also pretty sweaty. It's been hot in Philly, so I think we're all sweating together today is the real takeaway.
I'm trying to do math as to like what my temperature is in Fahrenheit because a Canadian, I use Celsius.
I know it. Tell it to me.
We're 40 degrees right now, Celsius.
40 degrees Celsius?
It's like 100.
That's like 10. 103 that's at least.
Yeah, baby, Canada is not cold anymore. Global warming has done its
job. Oh my God.
Gross.
Yeah, that's pretty much been our summer. At one point in time, we were up to, we almost hit 50, which was...
That's like Saudi Arabia, like levels of heat.
It's a nightmare up here. It's bad everywhere.
Well, everyone ready for how this is going to work?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how it's going to work is one of y'all will give your hot take. Then in the ensuing free-for-all, all of our secretaries will go back and forth digging into the take trying to determine how spicy they think it is. After that, we'll all rate how spicy we think it is on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being like milk and 10 being a Carolina Reaper. Then at the end of the show, we'll announce the spiciest take and take a moment to reflect on what we may or may not have learned throughout the show. Anyone have any questions?
I'm just looking up Scoville units, so that way when I have my 1 to 10 score, I can choose an appropriate pepper to represent that. But other than that, I'm ready to go. Just ignore me.
Perfect. Who would like to go first?
I will go first because I think mine is probably going to be the dumbest.
Okay.
And that is the D4 is the worst dice and it shouldn't exist.
Great.
Wow.
Expand.
Yes, please.
I'm bought in. What's happening?
It sucks in every regard. There's nothing good about the D4. And I'll tell you why. If you have a D4 near you, give it a quick
every
roll.
Every single person on this call just simultaneously reach directly next to them to grab a die.
Yeah, I know who you
yeah,
are.
Yeah, I'm just looking for, you know, my desk dice.
Yeah.
This is not I wasn't planning on playing, but it's good to have some desk dice.
I'm not going
to
lie, I don't have a D4.
Hey, that's the way the world should be.
I have a D100.
Yeah, I'm noticing I'm rolling this D4. It has a very sturdy plop. It doesn't have much of a roll. It has like
you
a bounce and a settle.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't roll. It gunks. Like it's not satisfying to roll, which is the whole point of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what you do with it, and it sucks to do that. Second, no one's excited for a 4, and that's the maximum number you can roll on this bad boy. That number sucks as well. Just like across the board. And look, if you drop any dice on the floor, this little guy, that's doing some damage. It's pointy. If you get like a sharp resin one, like I prefer the really sharp boys. And like, It's a weapon. It's a caltrop.
How do you feel about the crystal shaped D4s? Do you know what I'm talking about?
You know what? I can get more on board with that, but I will say the D8 is also in the running for worst dice at also.
Whoa.
Wow.
So, that's an even hotter take to me. The D8's one of my favorites. Because I'm going to be honest, D4, I kind of agree with you. As far as dice go, it's got not a lot of rollability. I think the point about not being excited about a 4 is just kind of how numbers work. Big numbers are better. By that logic, a D1000 is like a fucking Christmas.
God, could you imagine a boulder just rolling
it's
it?
It's just a circle.
The D4 does really feel like the penny of the dice set. You know, it kind of makes you wonder why it hasn't gotten phased out yet at a certain point.
No, see,
the D4's like the dime.
Again, not to be Canadian, but we've phased out our penny. Ooh. We don't have pennies up here.
Okay, well, we have a zinc lobby.
I will argue with you. It's not the penny, it's the nickel.
The nickel is the worst.
Right? The penny is iconic, right? Leave a penny, take a penny. Nobody cares about the nickel. There's never been a nickel anything.
Well, you got like a goose nickel up there.
What's on our actual nickel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you ready for this? It's a fucking beaver.
Ooh, I would use so many nickels if there was a beaver on our nickel.
Almost all of our coinage has a animal of some sort on it.
God, that's so much better.
Yeah.
We just have
it's
white guys.
It's a moose on the quarter.
And
it's
half of them are slave owners.
God.
Well, I mean, look, all of ours are British monarchy, so that's also not great.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like the head side of a coin always is going to suck.
Yeah, tails is better than heads, which isn't the argument we're making, but no. That is true.
So, okay, yeah. So we, I think, all agree that D4s are kind of a pain, but the fact that you said D8s?
Yeah.
Yeah, what the fuck is up with that?
That's wild.
So here's my gripe with a D8. It's just two D4s.
I fear that's just geometry, you know? Like, I fear that we've just...
Yeah, it's just, you know, if you ever study design formally, you learn about line, about color, about rhythm and gestalt, figure versus ground. The concept that the whole is worth more than the sum of its parts. And while I agree with your complaints about the D4, I feel like the D8 iterates and improves upon them. It has great rollability.
It's
it has
redemption.
A beautiful shape. It is one. It is out of the six dice, I think only five of them. It is, in fact, a platonic solid.
Pretty good.
Right? I don't know what that means. What's that mean?
I believe it means that it is symmetrical across different axes. You see, you notice how like the D10 is not because it has these weird, well, I mean, it's like symmetrical around certain axes, but like the shape of the polygon on the D10 has extra, what is the word? Vertices.
Little
compared
corners.
To like, yeah, compared to like a D12, a D20 or a D6 or a D4. It's not a regular shape.
Yeah, I don't know. Everything the D4 does wrong, the D8 redeems. Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying...
I love rolling an 8.
I'm just saying the next dice I would get rid of would be the D8.
God.
Really? I'm scrapping the D10 after the D4.
You know if what? I could get on board with that.
If I had to, and because we can't get rid of all the dice. If I only had to have three dice, I would have a D6, I would a D8, and a D20, and that's all I need.
I would scrap a D12.
See, I think the D12 is the unsung hero. I think a D12, it's like a little D20.
But it's a schmuck, because anytime you're like, oh, I want to go roll my D20, and you're like, man, I cannot roll higher than a 12. And you're like, oh, wait, I'm rolling a D12, not a 20.
When I started, like years ago, when I first started playing D&D in college, I did that so many times. I rolled my D12 instead of my D20.
It's deceptive.
It's tricky. I do think if we're going to get rid of one, we should definitely stick with the D10, just because the percentile dice can do the job of the D10, you know? You only need one of the two, and you might as well keep the one that's got two digits on it at that point, because you could still just roll it twice.
Oh, I'm scrapping both of them.
Ooh. I do love
both.
I love me a percentile table. I can't take that out of away from anyone.
That is fair. Oh, I also wanted to say that I don't know you very well, and so I don't want to insult you, Dave.
No, please, I will not be insulted.
I think people who love the D12s, it feels very performative to me.
You think I'm dice signaling right now? I'm
D12 yeah, dice I think signaling. You are. Is this liking the D12 is like liking matcha 3 years ago.
For me, it's because I never get to use it, right? Like, it yeah. just sits there hanging out, and I kind of mm-hmm. feel bad for it. It's like when you go, like, every time I've adopted a pet, it's always the one that, like, no one is fawning over, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's the one that's maybe a little older that people don't want to buy, like, adopt, like, the 5-year-old cat. I don't know. It's just one of those things where I'm just like, I wish I got to use it more.
I think that's reasonable.
And I feel like if we could just get rid of the D4 and just use the D12, I don't know how it would work statistically. I don't
Modulo
think that's...
3. Divide by 3.
Yeah.
Round down.
So how do we want to... Which of these do we want to rate? The D4, which I think we all agreed on, or Dane's D8 take? I think we should do the D8 take.
Yeah. Dane, is that all right with you? I think that's the hotter take.
Yeah. Okay.
What do we want to rate? The D8 sucks.
I'm giving that a 10 Carolina Reaper. That's a wow. crazy sentence to say. It is objectively at least in the upper half of dice, and it's crazy that you're cutting it that soon.
Sophia?
Yeah, I'm also giving this a 10 because the D8 wow. has very wide surfaces that allow for cool designs and printing of numbers in a way that some of the other dice don't. And I feel like we can't sleep on the artistry of how cool some of those numbers can look. And you can really appreciate them on a D8. You can't cut that from the lineup. That's a starter. That's a designated hitter, you know?
I think I have to give it a 9 because I did go, wow, when you said it. You know, like it didn't quite cause me to like pull my hair out, but I did react to it, which does add up to 29 divided by 3, which is like 9.66. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm loving this 6-6 business.
Who wants to go next?
I've made my take spicier since we talked about it in pre-recording. The Bard is the least sexiest class.
And you're right, and you should say it.
Why?
Okay, this is also a hot take. Like, it's just, have you ever met, I really feel like I'm going to alienate a lot of people here, and I'm so sorry for that.
I feel like I know exactly where you're going, and I agree.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just like, have you met a band kid?
Yeah.
And it's just also like,
a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, it's just like, I feel like, the musicians that I know and the comics that I know, either they're like you're a normal person with a job or you're kind of insufferable. The ones I'm friends with, it's like, oh, you're a normal person and your job is just doing this. And I just can't imagine that the offset and reputation, if they could magically power things from their songs, would be attractive to me at all. Like, have you ever seen a guy whip out an acoustic guitar at a party and think, yeah, yeah, this is doing a lot for me? And I know that people do, allegedly, in the same way that I know that someone is making Ordinary by Alex Warren stay at the number one Billboard chart. But, like, I've just never interacted with them directly, knowingly. And also, a lot of the other classes are just sexier.
And also, like, think about, like, if your average stand-up comedian or a dude in a cover band had access to sending. Right? Like, imagine if that was like, instead of just seeing it on an Instagram story or, you know, being blasted with Facebook event invites
to your head,
just getting it absolutely mainlined right into your brain. That nightmare.
And I've pulled up a list of the classes. I'm going to go one by one and tell you how they're sexier than Bards.
Give us your sexiness ranking of each D&D class.
Yes, please.
I don't know if I can like number rank them. I don't think we have the time for that. But here's the thing. A barbarian. Rage, when used to protect others, incredibly sexy. Okay. Incredibly sexy. Being able to shrug off getting stabbed or an arrow through your arm, that is hot as hell. And the next on the list is Barbie. Don't need to talk about them. Clerics. In a world where gods are definitively real, choosing to take such a specific side and choosing to put your faith in something that you know could kill you, that you know immediately makes enemies of other people, and devoting your life to the cause of something else in a world where you could pursue magic on your own and achieve for greatness, I think that very sexy. Druid, that's just hot. No, we don't. Yeah. There's like a lot of things going on there.
You can change into whatever you want.
You can change whatever you want. Fighter, I find competence to be really, really hot. I think someone who, like, not to even double entendre, someone who literally knows their way around a sword is like pretty convincing. And at least, you know, they are intelligent. They went to school. They have something that they believe in.
Mm-hmm.
Monks, I also feel like I don't have to explain why that's sexy. I think being so in tune with your body that you can be on par with magic users because of how well you control your physical form, that's sexy.
Yeah, you ever seen someone do a kip up? Like, come on.
Yeah. There's nothing sexier than a paladin, and I'll die on that hill. Yeah. An oath of devotion? Oh, making an oath? Sexy. Breaking an oath? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Rangers? Okay. I like to shit talk Rangers. And the thing Rangers have going for them is that the closest I'll come to respecting any institution of this government is Fish and Wildlife. I think Rangers in real life are very sexy because they know a lot about trees. They they save lives, and they maintain the forests, and they protect people. And I think they provide. I think providing for those around you is very sexy. Rogues? Come on. Come on. Come on. Sorcerers, if you want a charisma caster that's sexy, everything about the sorcerers, especially the not knowing, having magic for free, very sexy thing. Having powers you don't know how to control also can be very sexy. Having to undercover your family secrets to realize who you are only to find out that you get to define your own destiny hits every time. Warlock? I wish I could be a warlock. Nothing sexier than making deals with powers you can't control and paying the price.
Okay. I actually have an alternate take for warlocks. Mm-hmm. Is that they're just in debt for the rest of their life.
God forbid someone be a sugar baby. Okay. Yeah, I'm in debt too. And you know what? I've got a lot of trips and photos to show from it. It's fine. Warlocks are in debt. Okay. I don't have student loans, anyone? That's fine. And you know what? There's a sexier ways to get in debt.
Yeah.
There's less sexy ways to get in debt.
I wish my student loans gave me powers.
Right? Yeah. And then wizards, the hubris. That's always going to be sexy. The hubris of man, genderless, speciesless. Just seeing a world in which there are so many things that exist that naturally have magic and choosing to uncover the secrets of the universe to secure that for yourself and trying to compare yourself to spirits, gods, demigods, what have you. Very sexy. You know what's not sexy? A fucking liar. It's fine.
Anyway, here's Wonderwall.
Anyways, here's Wonderwall.
So could I embarrass myself for a second?
Yeah.
So with
always.
The first person I dated, I didn't know that it was like a double date with my friend and his partner at the time. And I was 16 and it was New Year's Eve. And I was just thought I was hanging out with, you know, my friends. And this one person who I'd never hung out with before. And for some reason, I thought it was a great idea as a singer to sing Stayin' Alive by the Bee Gees.
Just like a cappella, or
like
was it karaoke?
CPR.
We're waiting for the ball to drop. And I'm just like, let me just bust out. I'm sure there was a reason, but I was like, let me just bust out Stayin' Alive by the Bee Gees, 16-year-old Max. And apparently that won her over. So there is for bards. And we dated for like a year and a half.
Hey, can I tell you something? Mm. If you singing Staying Alive by the Bee Gees won her over, you had already been won. Or she had already been won. Because what you're expecting me to believe is that this girl was standing next to you at New Year's Eve, you know, the holiday where you stand next to people you want to kiss, and then was like, I don't know about my decision. I'll just stand
really
here.
On the fence about this one.
And then here's you start singing Staying Alive. And it was like,
by the way, I use my fuck.
I think maybe your logic here isn't doing what you wanted to do, but I'm glad it worked out for you in the end.
You know what really sucks about this whole thing is technically, if we're going by what we're doing now and what I assume y'all are passionate about as I am, I think we're all bards, guys.
Yeah.
Like, I really do think...
Oh. Well, here's the thing. I'm multi-classed. I think the fact that I have a stable 9-to-5 is the sexiest thing about me. I think it sets me apart from the pack. I love being a corporate girl boss. Are you joking?
Sorry, what do you think of that? Is that wizard?
Yeah. I'm a bard wizard multi-class for sure.
Yeah.
I also have a 9-to-5, but I'm very much a bard in mine. I'm a supervisor, but I'm also a personality hire. Like,
yeah, man, I'm a bartender. Real. Like, I don't, like, I've got nothing going for me, guys. I'm barred through and through. Like, that's...
Yeah, freelancer. So I'm locked in. I don't even, I dream of taking a multi-class in Warlock. If anyone wants to patron me, I'm here for it.
I feel like freelancing is kind of a Warlock thing. You're making a pact with... Yeah. A power for a brief period of time.
It's like you're like making just several packs at different times.
It's kind of like contracting in a way. I'd like to think that my Warlock pack would be on something more interesting than a W9, but still, it's cool.
I feel like you're probably part bard, part artificer because of all the editing that you do.
I do love artificers.
Yeah, and I didn't mention artificers because if Wizards isn't going to care about them, I'm not either.
As an artillerist player in our first campaign, artificers rock. They're very adroit with tools, and that could be hot in a way.
I think engineering Dexterous. Is hot, unless they use it for evil.
Because I don't know you, there are so many things that I'm like, I almost went to engineer, got my master's in engineering. And I'm like, I can't say that to a stranger who just said engineering is
hot. I'm a lesbian. I'm not going to find you attractive no matter what.
Well, now, great. Hold on. Did you hear the Bee Gees, though?
The only man that I ever kissed, this is back when I was in college, I was figuring out myself out, identity and shit. The only man that I ever kissed, he told me he was a professional outdoorsman, and that's how we started the conversation. So that was also my argument for Rangers. Yeah, tell me shit I don't know about trees. That's great.
So we've kind of strayed from Bard is the least sexy class, but I think I've been convinced. Based on that ranking. Is anyone, do we want to just go ahead and rate it now?
Yeah.
Sure.
Sophia?
Yeah.
What do you rate it?
I think that this will be a hot take until people hear your ranking, and then it will no longer be a hot take. So I'm going to give this like a 4 out of 10, I think. It's you're right, and you should say it. You know, there's...
And I'll wear that with pride.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the ones where... the discussion, like, it comes in as a hot take, and then you just convinced everyone it wasn't a hot take because you're correct.
I also am pretty good at arguing things, I think.
Dane, what do you got?
I think this is a 5. I think it's middle. I think it's like right in the middle because I don't think it really needs much convincing. Like, I really do think it's like you either agree or there are people who are going to like really die on the hill of four bards. And I think it's just like it's middle of the road. I think it's right there hovering in between, you know, it's a hot take, but I think it could go either way very quickly for anyone.
I'm going to start with this. I think you're correct. You have convinced Thank me you. That it, you know, there is no leeway there anymore. You are correct. So I think I will put this also with Dane's reasoning at a 5 that, you know, people are going to go, what people are going to say it's a 10 or people are going to say it's a 1. So I think that averages out to it being a 5, which puts the average here at 4.66, but a correct 4.66.
Yeah. And I'm happy with that. I think a 4.66, I think that's like a bird's eye chili. No, that's actually probably a cayenne.
Ooh.
Hi, my name is Robin.
And my name is Dylan.
Do you like Choices Matter video games?
If so, we started this podcast, Dorkspawn, so that I could show my best friend my favorite RPG series of all time, Dragon Age.
And now that I've played it, we want to share more of these choice-heavy games with each other.
Right now, Robin is showing me Mass Effect, which I have never played before.
And we are going to continue playing through these games together and discussing them book club style as we go.
You can join our Discord and play along with us, and tune into Dorkspawn every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sophia, why don't you round it out here?
Legendary resistances are dumb and we should get rid of them. I don't think they should exist. I know Ooh. That ostensibly they are solving for a mechanical balance issue when your party gets to be higher level. I'm coming at it from a D&D perspective, but in any game where you have the ability to basically completely nullify an attack on your big bad evil guy, the party is going to scale a lot better than an individual dragon, you know, whatever it is going to. But a lot of the problems it actually ends up solving for are the player who says, I polymorph the bad guy into a sheep, and then just ends the combat immediately in a non-narratively satisfying way. And I don't think that that's a mechanical thing that we should have a defense for. I think that's a table conversation that needs to be happening. That's a player behavior problem. And you can't solve for player behavior with mechanics. You kind of need to just have a conversation with your friends that you're playing with about, hey, I set up this cool big combat for you. Let's make it cinematic together, as opposed to, you know, doing your immediate fix. I think it just ends up kind of creating this like DM player cold war in big combats where all of the spellcasters and fighters are saving their biggest guns for whenever the legendary resistances get worn out. And DMs are waiting for the big guns to go off to use the legendary resistances. And it just ends up dragging combat out for a really long time. And it's, I think we should just get rid of it. I think we just need to talk to our tables more about what we want out of the combat rather than trying to negate what are already really hard hits to land.
This is very interesting because you have me at like with the hot take of we should get rid of legendary resistances. I'm like, okay, I'm pouring the gasoline. Let's set this shit on fire. And then your solution being that it should be a conversation rather than a better mechanic is the thing that I think is the hottest take. It's like, you know, when you eat something spicy and then you like, you're like, oh, this is fine. And then you swallow it and you get like the second kick. That's the hot take. And I don't know what the solution is, but I think I disagree with that.
Ooh. Could I offer a counterpoint? Because something that I've seen that I like used in third party content, like MCDM has a lot of big bad guys that have kind of an alternate version of legendary resistance where it costs them something to resist your attacks. So, for example, like 10 feet of movement speed, or it lowers their AC for the rest of the fight. So it still has some of the effects of legendary resistance, but it is still a mechanic. And that is, I will say, the only like happy medium where I'm like, okay, I guess legendary resistance is fine because I, as the player, still feel like I'm accomplishing something, even if I'm setting off the metaphorical big gun of whatever spell is not going to do its thing.
Dane, does Pathfinder and Starfinder have a legendary resistance-ish?
They don't. Typically, it's higher level enemies will have what my players will call bullshit abilities, in which they will just be either immune to certain things or will have like really powerful reactions to be like, if they take X amount of damage, they can do this. They can. It's a lot of Pathfinder and Starfinder, especially the first editions of both, are very action economy focused. D&D is very similar in the, but I find that Starfinder is really like that because you've got like really high tech stuff, so that you really have to like be like, well, why can't I just use my jetpack or my teleporter or my force field? Or so there's a lot of like action economy rules to sort of like balance that. I think I disagree with you. Ooh. In the sense that I think if you're going to put one boss in a room with 3 to 5 to 6 incredibly strong heroes, you need to balance the tables. And I think there's something to be said about, like, the problem is like metagaming, right? Is like you, what you were saying in the sense of being like, well, I know this creature probably has legendary resistances, so therefore I'm not going to use my level 9 spells or whatever. I think that's where you run into a problem, and that's where I agree that, like, you need to have, like, hopefully your players are buying in and being like, I'm not going to metagame and assume that, you know, the big necromancer guy can just eat my spells. But I think it's also a flavor thing too, right? I think if you just say legendary resistance, your spell doesn't go through, and you leave it at that, I think that's lame. Whereas if you never use the word legendary resistance and you just tell the party what's happened, mm-hmm. I think you can fluff it, right? You can be like, oh, you cast your spell and he tears a rip into reality and the fireball gets sucked into, you know, the dark tapestry or whatever, and just never use the word legendary resistance.
If I'm playing in like a high level campaign and we're going against a boss, especially if I'm playing like Dungeons and Dragons, I haven't played Pathfinder, but I've played Starfinder. I have activated the part of my brain that is trying to optimize numbers and things for big hit, or for like, I want to do strategy and I want to do crunch. And to me, it would be more rewarding to know that there's the potential for that if I hold back, I could risk, either I can hold back my spells, hoping that we can waste a resource that this boss may or may not have, or that will do whatever, or I can hit hard and risk wiping my spells. However, the idea is that we are both going to hit as hard as possible and pull out all of the stops in order to do this big combat. That is what I would want out of that. And I don't think that talking about either some things being off the table, unless there's a reason in the game, would be as rewarding.
Interesting.
To tangent a little bit, I love what Dane described as of not saying what the mechanic is. Mm-hmm. So like when, like, you don't say someone's like, when you attack like a NPC and you don't say what the save that they got was, you just say the effects of it. You don't say you pass or you fail. You just say this happens. I think that's so brilliant because it becomes so much richer narratively and cinematically to just say that happens as opposed to say, oh, they got a 17 and then this happens.
Yeah. I mean, like the best move is always going to be add flavor and narrative to your descriptions of everything. Like, even as a player, you should be like, you shouldn't just be saying, I cast fireball. You should be like, yeah, okay, well, I take this spell component and I, you know, do this action to unleash this huge, and then, you know, you can figure out the mechanics of yourself. But I think what gets me about legendary resistance, because Dane, I love what you're saying about Pathfinder and Starfinder, because they don't have legendary resistance, but there are kind of akin to legendary actions where your, you know, one dragon gets additional things that it can do between rounds, not on its turn, to help compensate for the action economy, which I find to be a much richer way to keep the combat interesting, keep your players on their toes because you're firing your big guns while they fire their big guns, and you know, still lets you beef up your bad guys to compete with higher level parties and higher level players without just saying like your big spell doesn't work. Because I think what I've run into as someone who likes to play a lot of spellcasters is you get a very limited resource in spell slots, especially mm-hmm. for higher level spells. And so the instinct is, let me save these for the big bad guy I know we have to fight at the end of this dungeon. But maybe you only have one 6th level spell slot. And so if you use that to get down a legendary resistance, there are narrative ways that you can make it sound cooler. But at the end of the day, we are still playing a game. And I think as a player, there's an awareness of like, I am just kind of throwing a resource at a wall to get this guy down in the vain hope that he hasn't already just failed the save, which many spells in D&D are, especially at a higher mm-hmm. level. There's already a lot of ways for a big bad guy to not like become susceptible to your disintegrate, right? Like there's already a really strong chance that they have high buffs to their stats, high, you know, additions to whatever they roll, that they're already going to fail. And so the moment of success as a player of like, oh my gosh, everything synced up. We used cutting words and silvery barbs and through like a wish and a prayer, my big gun worked, all to be fading away because it's one of 3 legendary resistances that we know this guy has in the fight, is very frustrating.
And I think you're winning me back here because I think framing it as, a legendary resistance is a cop out for what could be a much more interesting mechanical reason for that. I can get on board with that because even thinking about like a counter spell, like that's something the players have access to, or even if they didn't, it's like a resource. There's a role. There's some level of control and giving people not even just like the illusion, but just the chance for the something to go through.
Yeah,
I love giving the illusion of choice to players. And that's what you get at when you're talking about like the way you flavor it. And I do think it could be limiting. And I think this is a big difference between like D&D and Pathfinder, yeah, as absolutely. I understand it, and Starfinder, or like as I've played like the 5e, the like space 5e, you know, wraps and stuff. And it's just that I think D&D simplifies in a way that takes away the mechanical consequences of very particular decisions.
Yeah, it's an interesting like argument to make either way of like, I really like the idea of like, oh, when you use a legendary resistance, that also like it's, you know, your big armored, you know, Death Knight who blocks a disintegrate with his shield, but now his shield's gone. So now he has lower AC. Like, I like that. That kicks ass. If I was in a boss fight and I was feeling like, oh, sure, my level 6 spell just got zapped, but I see a result out of it.
It feels like you're using an actual resource rather than just check a box. Yeah.
That's cool. Like, I like that. But I do understand that, like, there needs to be some way to be like, because, like, I don't know the kind of people you're playing with, but especially in, like, my home games and stuff, where, like, if I give my 5 players one round of combat at, like, level 15 or plus, if I'm playing that character or that boss stat block, like, the way it should be run with the right AC and the right HP, it's done round one.
Yeah.
If it rolls low initiative, it's probably not even going to get to go because they're going to do crazy ass shit to specifically because they are holding their actions and they're holding their spells for this moment. And that sucks both for me and I think for the players. Mm-hmm. I think there's a point of diminishing return of like every now and then, if your players pull something off and they just fucking steamroll one of your bosses, there's a moment of being like, that kicked ass. But if that happens every time, I think you start being like, well, maybe legendary resistances could may have made that fight a little cooler.
Like calling it to you like the ring of power.
Yeah. Yeah.
Negate the fireball.
So easy.
No, I think that's valid. You know, like I don't want to discount DM enjoyment or GM enjoyment of a game because that is, you know, they're also a player at the they're also a player at the table.
Hot takes.
Fuck those guys.
Yeah,
but it's something to be said. Like with legendary resistances, it shouldn't be there to thwart your players. It should be there to enhance, like to make the combat challenging in the sense that they now have to like come up with a better plan than. Cast high level spell, right? Like it needs to be like if we're gonna believe that these people are level 15 because they've partied together for as long as they have and they've fought their way to that level and that power level, I would expect them to be like, well, I'm gonna use my high level spell to drop the resistance, hopefully, so that you can go right. Like there should be a level of collaboration and teamwork that should be being used. And if you're just operating on everyone like on their own track of being like, GM uses legendary resistance, wizard uses high level spell to get eaten, druid doesn't do anything because he doesn't want his spell to be eaten. You know, I think that point in time, there's a bigger disconnect in terms of how the table is being played than mechanics.
I'm going to steal that next time I run a high level thing of like, you know, when the legendary resistance, it becomes a lost shield or something like that. Yeah. I think that's,
yeah.
Let's call wizards. Like, we fixed it.
I don't know. What did you said that there was a source material that does
NCDM,
that.
NCDM periodically publishes some like zine issues and also supplements mostly for D&D 5e, but I'm sure that a lot of it could be adapted to other things. Our DM Austin loves pull in monster stat blocks from them because they're really good at incorporating a lot of interesting mechanics that kind of balance action economy, introduce new problems for players in ways that can really like change up a fight and, you know, plays well with the system. You know, it plays to the strengths of, okay, the thing that I really like of theirs is both the legendary resistance lowering AC or specifically reducing movement speed was one we ran into recently where it's like, okay, every time he uses this legendary resistance, this, you know, dragon is going to be 10 feet slower and it's going to make it a lot harder for it to get around this big battlefield, which is, I think, a cool mechanic for a fight as well. But also adding things like legendary actions so the creature can, you know, do interesting things, or like layer actions so the creature can, you know, change the shape of the battlefield, which I think could be a really effective way to make your players use resources they might be trying to save to do a big hit instead to sort of change the terrain of the field. But yeah, it's MCDM's great. We can't recommend it. Rolling with difficulty approved.
Not a sponsor.
Not a sponsor. But shout out. But no, yeah. Sorry, Max.
No, yeah. I was just going to say, do we want to go ahead and rank the Legendary Resistance's bad take?
I'm torn between a 7 and an 8. I think that's a pretty hot take. Obviously, again, nowhere near the D8 take in my book.
The definitive winner.
I literally thought that was a softball, just goof.
Not to me. Apparently, I feel really strongly about dice. I feel more strongly about that take than anything I've heard today. Love and light to everyone. I just like the concept of a Naga Viper, so I'm gonna give it an 8.
Solid.
Oh, is that the pepper?
Yeah.
Okay. Dane?
It's a new homebrew creature I've made with no consultation with my viper. Party.
It sounds cool.
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna give this a 7. I think a 7 is I think the discussion was and I think there are some DMs who will fight you to their bitter end to maintain legendary resistances. Well, so
yeah, my DM
I think 7. Actually, yeah. You know what? I'm going to bump up to 8. I think 8 is
yeah.
I'm going to go with I think a 6 because of the fact of what you described of it's so disheartening to have it happen. Like when you cast your level 9 fireball and they're just like, I survive.
You know what would be a great way to litmus test this is you make a Reddit post on like a D&D subreddit with
bad.
These takes.
Yes.
And, oh yeah, and then just see how it goes.
And see how absolutely bad shit people go for it.
Yeah, I mean, if this really picks up, you know, maybe we could get our own subreddit that people will discuss all the takes.
Yeah, I would love to see how normal people would be about a woman having a gaming take online.
God.
I mean... That's honestly in my rating, I've always been like, yeah, I can hear. I think Amelia, you talked about in the other episode where it's like people getting upset about the thing that you would assume everyone would.
And let me just make an announcement here. If you disagree with any of my takes, I really do not care. Please go argue and do not tag me in it. You can have whatever opinion you want. I don't need that in my mentions.
To recap this episode, at the bottom, with a wonderful ranking of Bards Aren't Sexy, is Amelia's take of 4.66. Sophia's Legendary Resistances Are Bad take is 7.33. And with the hottest take to date, Dane's D8s Suck take is a 9.66. Did anyone learn anything? Or have feelings changed about anything that was presented today?
I mean, I think I experienced my feeling changes in real time. I learned that I care a lot more about the fate of D8s than D4s.
Yeah.
I loved your class sexiness ranking. I thought that was great and accurate.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm going to try to appreciate the D8 more. I've heard what you said. Yeah. I'm listening.
And I'll double down on my hate of the D4 out of respect.
Yeah.
That's honestly, that's what I came here to do.
I came here to get more haters.
Yeah.
Thank you all for joining me on this. This has been the Dice Cabinet. It seemed like it was a pretty safe space for your spicy takes. And as always, how about a high five?
Thanks for listening to Mage Hand High Five, the Dice Cabinet. Did you like what you hear? Did you want to hear more of it? We've got a whole other episode of it and even more on the way over on our Patreon at patreon.com/magehandhighfive. For just a few bucks a month, you get all kinds of extra goodies, including early access to merch, peeks behind Casey's GM screen, more dice cabinet, and a whole second extra podcast, Mage Hand Down Low, where we talk about all the behind the scenes of our episodes. Not to mention, you can help support small creators like us as we work on this passion project. Check us out over at patreon.com/magehandhighfive. Our music is by Jacob Kirzner. Our logo is by Shane Smith. The cover art is by Robin Langenhop. Check out our website at www.magehandhighfive and look for us all across social media. We're on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Discord, Blue Sky, and wherever else we may be, we're going to be there at magehandhighfive. Go to your podcatcher of choice and throw a 5-star review our way. Throw it, I say throw it! And now I'm going to shout out all of our subscribers over on Patreon, and I'm going to do it in one breath. Michael Carey, Marinette, Max Eats Sticks, Maltim, Azure, Luke Sharples, Miranda Koppel, Jay, Theo L, Dwight, Lindsay, Dale Heimbecker, DM Dippyfresh, Dart Zelda, Deborah Jacobson, Jackson Maurer, Ocarina Sonata, Mads Angelicube, Morgan Faber, Kathleen Ayers, Kellen Wilbur, Trout Relief, Chronic Dreamer, Patrick Hickman, Debbie, Nathan Ritter, Chicken 2, Tasty, Avenue, Navy Spar, AM Lovely's House, Cinda Velvis, Dust, Carpenter, Diana Bacon, Alphorn, Snooky, Liz, Bart, Carrie Lee, Jonathan Gunn, Tyler Gardner, Elvis, Soldier, Lana, Bangalore, Eggman, I'll go on the inside of Richardson. Well, I guess I went full gremlin this time. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your folks about the show. Let all acquaintance be forgot, because you already told them about the show. When you did, you used the hashtag MHH5. And hey, how about a high five?